Hi, this is Dr. David Stevens, the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, and thank you for joining me for this issue of Christian Doctor's Digest Stat. You know, we occasionally do a stat issue when there's a issue so hot, so relevant, and things that our members need to know that we want to get it into their hands immediately. And that surely is what the same-sex marriage ruling from the Supreme Court is. It is a game changer, especially in the area of religious liberty. That's why I'm delighted to introduce to you Ryan Anderson. Ryan is a PhD. He researches and writes about marriage and religious liberty for the Heritage Foundation, where he's the senior research fellow in American Principles and Public Policy. Ryan's got a very broad background. He got his PhD from Notre Dame. He was assistant editor of First Things. He was the executive director of the Witherspoon Institute, where he was the research assistant for Robert P. George. Done dozens upon dozens of interviews on ABC, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, Fox, and other channels. He's even been quoted by Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Samuel Alito in their decisions on a number of Supreme Court issues. It's a delight to have him at the microphone as we talk about his latest book, Truth Over Rule, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, which just came out in July of 2015 and is the first book-length response to the Supreme Court's 2015 ruling on marriage. Ryan, you wrote a great book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. What's the situation? I mean, we all know what happened at the Supreme Court. What's the impact of that as we look down the road, and why is what you're writing so important to get out there?
Sure. I mean, what's really important, and what I try to stress repeatedly in this new book, Truth Overruled, is that we're in a very similar situation as the pro-life movement was in 42 years ago after Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court has just issued an activist decision that's ignored the actual text and logic and history and structure of the Constitution. And we need to resist this ruling, and we need to do what we can to protect our freedom after a bad Supreme Court ruling and to rebuild a strong marriage culture. Just like the pro-life movement had to resist Roe v. Wade, they had to protect the freedom of pro-life physicians and nurses and hospitals not to have to perform abortion, and then they had to slowly do the hard work of rebuilding a culture of life, so too we'll have to do the same things on this marriage ruling.
You know, one of the differences between this and the pro-life issue is essentially anybody that opposes it is labeled as a bigot. In other words, you don't even have a word in this conversation. You're just a racist on a different issue. How do we approach this? I know you have realized, as I think many of our members, you can't do that on moral position or theological position. You really have to do it in a rational way of, is this good public policy? Is this good for families?
Yeah, so what I've tried to do in this book is just make a secular argument about the truth about marriage. I argue from the basis of natural law, from social science, from constitutional law, to explain what marriage is, the union of a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, a mother and a father, why marriage matters to a society, you know, the importance of having strong, intact, married, biological mother-father families, and then what the consequences will now be that the court has redefined marriage, why redefining marriage is a bad idea. And I try to do that without appealing to theology or the Bible or religious sources, because I think what's most important right now is for people to see that there are rational arguments, simply based on human reason, simply based on human nature, for why the truth about marriage is what it is and why that truth matters, and what the consequences will be now that the court has overruled the truth about marriage.
Yeah, and the elites on the other side, as you point out, say there are no arguments. Yeah, they don't believe there any exists, so that just kind of disqualifies you from speaking, so these are so important. Share some of that. Equip us as we're dealing with these issues with patients in our communities, in our churches, in public policy. We have a good number of members that are involved significantly in public policy. How do you speak out on this in the public square? If you get on CNN and have 5 minutes, if you're lucky, how do you make your point in a rational way?
Sure. I mean, the main starting point here on simply the marriage issue is to say, well, why is the state in the marriage business in the first place? We don't have government in the bar mitzvah business. We don't have government in the baptism business. Why was the state in the marriage business? And it's because marriage is a public institution. It's not merely a private relationship. It's not merely a religious relationship. It has those components, but it's a personal relationship that has a public purpose. And the public purpose of marriage is to unite a man and a woman exclusively and permanently to each other as husband and wife, so that they would then be mother and father to any children that that union produces. So there are going to be sacred dimensions to marriage, but there's also going to be a secular dimension to marriage. There are going to be supernatural aspects of marriage, but there's also this natural function that marriage performs. And the states in the marriage business, because of its secular and natural aspects, it leaves the churches and the synagogues to deal with the supernatural and the sacred. But we need this natural function being performed, because the sexual union of a man and a woman can produce a child, and that child needs both a mother and a father. And when this doesn't happen, social costs run high. Social costs in terms of crime, in terms of poverty, in terms of unemployment, a variety of things that you wouldn't want to have happen to your society. Now, if marriage isn't that, what is the alternative? The alternative is that marriage is simply about consenting adult romance and caregiving, that marriage is simply about the love lives of consenting adults, of two or more individuals who consent to live with each other and love each other and take care of each other. But if that's the truth about marriage, why is the government in the marriage business at all? If that's all that marriage is, why can't we get the state out of the marriage business and just leave it to private contracts and leave it to houses of worship and leave it to civic institutions? So the argument here is really that the people in favor of redefining marriage can't even explain what marriage is or why it matters, and that the people who want to retain the historic definition of marriage can explain why it is that government cares about marriage at all.
You know, there's good data. How do you support that in a brief way? As you say, there's negative consequences of going down this route, and it's going to hurt children. It's going to hurt society.
So one of the things that I do in the book is I quote President Obama. He has a great quote about what happens when a child grows up without their married mother and father. And he says, you know, we know the statistics that children who grow up with a father are 5 times more likely to commit crime, 10 times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. I'm paraphrasing there because I forget the 5, the 10, and the 20, which is attached to which social outcome. But I cite President Obama to say, look, even someone on the other side of the political spectrum used to recognize the importance of fathers. He said this before he evolved. And so the question now is, how do we insist that fathers are essential when the Supreme Court has redefined marriage to make fathers optional? That's one of the challenges here, is that if marriage is primarily about uniting a man and a woman as husband and wife to be mother and father, what happens when the law now teaches that men and women are interchangeable, that mothers and fathers are replaceable? That's going to be the challenge for the post-evolution Obama, given what he said about the pre-evolution social reality.
Are there studies looking at this with same-sex couples that are raising children? You know, once to say single parents, you know, the other side will come back and say, oh, no, this isn't single parents. You've got two moms. You've got two dads. And it's just as good. It's just as equal. How do you deal with that?
There are a variety of studies that use non-random, non-representative, small sample techniques. And those are the studies that you see the APA citing, and I think even the American Medical Association filed an amicus brief saying there's no difference between same-sex and traditional married mother-father parenting. The problem is that the studies that the APA relied on when it filed that amicus brief, not a single one met the gold standard for social science research, which is to use large random representative samples. If you don't use large random representative samples, you can't draw conclusions about a population as a whole. So far, there's only been 8 studies that have used large random representative samples that studied the effects of children being raised by same-sex parents, and those 8 studies come to the conclusion that the best place for a child is with their married mother and father. So in Chapter 7 of Truth Overruled, I go through this controversy. I explain what the consensus of social science had been up until about a decade ago. So prior to the debate about same-sex marriage, there was a consensus that the best place for children was with their married biological mom and dad. Then I explain same-sex marriage comes on the scene. There begins political correctness to intrude into dispassionate social science, and we get some of these small, non-representative samples that yield conclusions that are politically correct, and that's what the professional associations start relying on. Then I point out we had some scholars that said, wait a minute, let's actually look at the methodology for these studies called into question, and now we have these newer studies using the large random representative sampling techniques, and they reaffirm the historic consensus that the best place for a child is with a married mother and father.
You know, there's so much bigotry in professional journals now, unfortunately, because they're, you know, science rules, science is truth, all those type of things. But I know one of our members actually wrote a critique of the APA, showed the fallacy of their studies, and even some of the studies, they quoted conclusions that weren't even there. She couldn't even get it published. And that's happened on a lot of issues where we used to have objective science, and now we just find, you know, the agendas, and then those are protected by the professional organizations. And unfortunately, the minority oftentimes have intimidated good science from being out there. So how do we move forward with this, Ryan? I mean, give us a strike. I mean, we're going to go through all the evidence, and you've got tons of it in the book, and it really arms people to make rational arguments, as we do on other issues like abortion or physician-assisted suicide or whatever. How do we move this forward? What can individuals do? What can groups and organizations do, as was done with the pro-life issue on abortion, to really begin to sway this back the other direction? Because I sense among people, and you probably do too, many of them are beat down, afraid even to say anything about this.
Sure. I mean, the starting point here is to not be intimidated into the silence. If we go quiet, if we decline to bear witness to the truth, then we can guarantee that the truth will lose. So one of the reasons that I wrote this book was to equip people to be able to make the case for marriage, whether it's in the home, at the workplace, at church, to have a variety of ways in which you can say that faith and reason go together. So you can be talking with your secular neighbor, you can be talking with one of your children, one of your brothers or sisters, talking with a colleague at work, and say, no, it's not just based on the Bible, it's not just based on theology. Here are solid philosophical and social science and constitutional arguments that support this understanding of marriage as well. So one of the first places is going to be not being intimidated, not being bullied into silence, because that's the technique that the left has relied on the most to kind of engage in this both cultural and legal redefinition of marriage. The next is going to be working hard to protect our freedoms. One of the things that the pro-life movement did that was very important was that they ensured that pro-life doctors and nurses and hospitals could remain faithful pro-lifers and practice medicine. Imagine what would have happened had the code of ethics or various laws required every doctor and every nurse in every hospital to perform abortion. It would have had huge consequences for the ability of pro-lifers to be physicians. We need to do the same thing now, whether it's Christian schools or adoption agencies or the baker, the florist, the photographer. No one who believes the truth about marriage, that it's the union of a man and a woman, should be penalized by the government or driven out of civil society or driven out of professional associations simply because they believe the truth on marriage. And then lastly, we have to make the case for marriage. The pro-life movement found ways to make scientific arguments, you know, biology, embryology, ultrasound. They found ways to make that argument, philosophical arguments, legal arguments. They found ways of offering compassion and assistance to people who are in crisis pregnancies. Everything they did needs to be replicated on the marriage issue. We have to find ways to make the argument for marriage. We have to find ways of assisting people who have same-sex attractions but who believe the truth about marriage, so they don't want to redefine marriage. We need to find ways to bear witness to the truth in the public square.
You know, Ryan, something became my interest, and that was the whole concept of a constitutional argument. How would you make that concisely as we're getting to hear the close here? But I think our members would love to hear that.
Sure. The Constitution is silent on the definition of marriage, the U.S. Constitution, that is. Many of the state constitutions, the citizens voted to define marriage in their state constitutions as a union of a man and a woman. And then liberals said, oh no, that violates the U.S. Constitution because of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. But the Equal Protection Clause says that we have to treat things that are the same in the same ways. But a same-sex relationship isn't the same as an opposite-sex relationship. No same-sex relationship can create new life. No same-sex relationship can unite new life with both a mother and a father. And so it's reasonable to treat different things in different ways. That doesn't violate equality. Everyone in this debate is in favor of marriage equality. We want the law to treat all marriages in the same way. What we disagree about is what sort of a relationship is a marriage. And the Constitution doesn't answer that question. The Constitution is silent on what sort of a relationship is a marriage, and that means it resides with the people. We, the people, have to make marriage policy. We, the people, have to say what sort of a relationship is a marriage, and then we're going to treat all of those relationships equally. The Supreme Court here just smuggled in their own definition of marriage. Anthony Kennedy and the four liberal justices said, we think marriage is about consenting adult love and companionship, provided it's between two people. And the Chief Justice, John Roberts, repeatedly said, well, why are you limiting it to twosomes? The Constitution doesn't say that. Why are you denying equality to threesomes or foursomes? It becomes arbitrary for these judges to simply insert their own philosophy of marriage and then say the Constitution requires it. Our Constitution leaves this question to the American people.
Let me ask you this question, Ryan. Do you ever think it will be reversed at the Supreme Court level?
Well, who knows? I mean, a lot depends on who will be on the Supreme Court in the future, depending on how the forthcoming elections go and how replacements are made. In the next presidential cycle, we will have four Supreme Court justices who are in their 80s. The next president could get to appoint up to four Supreme Court justices. It also depends on whether or not states bring constitutional challenges to these laws. The states could bring a lawsuit saying that, look, the data's in, and ever since you made us redefine marriage, here are the consequences of your ruling. Here are the ways in which you forcing us to redefine marriage has harmed the common good. It's led to a decrease in marriage rates. It's led to an increase and children who aren't being raised by their moms and dads. And so we want to reinstate our historic marriage policy. All of those things are possible. It just depends on what people are willing to do.
Yeah, Ryan, you have given us a lot to think about and given us a wonderful resource. I highly, highly recommend this to our members. I know they have a lot of journals and things by their bedside, but this book should be on the top of that and be the first thing they read, because this is so important, especially on religious liberty. And I think it's already spilling over into other areas of religious liberty where our members are under intense pressure. You know, 2 out of 5 have been pressured and 1 out of 4 have been discriminated against with a job or educational opportunity or a promotion. And so this is a real issue for all of us. And I think this is going to be very important to, and more important than the latest antibiotic you need to learn about is getting educated on this issue. Ryan, thank you for what you've done. You've given us the toolbox. You've given us the information. And my prayer is that many, with your encouragement, are going to be using that to make a difference in their culture. Thank you for what you've done.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think I could give a more enthusiastic endorsement of a book than I've just given you on Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. Listen, if you'd like to get a copy right now, you can do that by just flipping on your computer, going to cmda.org, and go to the bookstore, and it's available. Or give us a toll-free call at 888-230-2637. We need to be informed not only for ourselves, but to educate others. And it's going to be very important for us to have a firm grasp on this issue as we continue to face challenges in our culture. Well, until we get a chance to get back together again on Christian Doctors Digest, God bless.
Christian Doctors Digest is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Christian Doctors Digest are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Christian Doctors Digest reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.